CliffCentral.com. Good morning, everybody. Yes, we are here. We are live and we're ready to take you through your Tuesday morning. It is the 22nd of June, the worst day of winter is supposedly over, although, I don't know, you ask me, July and August are always like a son of a bitch, especially at August, you know. My birthday month that I hate so much because the wind blows and it's cold and the winter's still not fucked off. That's how I'm feeling. So, welcome to the show this morning. We are joined by Sia Sangweni. And we are joined by Sammy Lehoko, who we haven't seen for a long, long time. How are you doing, Sammy? No, nice to see you, huh? Look at you.
I don't know how you guys do it. I don't know how you wake up this early in the morning. It's bizarre.
Yeah, no, we. Trust, nobody likes this this early morning feeling, you know? You just get used to it, that's all. You just eventually go, you know, six in the morning. Like this morning I lay in bed and I was curling up like a child, just going, please don't make it 5:30 yet. Please don't, please. But it did nothing, right? The gods were deaf to my pleas, so I just had to get up.
Yeah, well, I'm 3 hours ahead of time for work, so, hey.
Well, I know. Isn't it nice, though, that you can get your day started before everyone else?
No.
No, exactly.
I'd love to sort of sleep in, to be honest.
So what's been happening with you? I mean, let's just reintroduce you to people who might have forgotten how we all know each other and kind of where we last crossed paths. And it's been a while since I spoke to you. In fact, I got a message from you about 3 months, 2 months ago, saying that you were back in the swing of things because we wanted to put you on the TV show and you'd been really busy and you'd been all over the place. So what's been going down? Give us the story. Give us a little synopsis of what's been happening in your life.
Yeah, well, I mean, many, many years ago, it was TV and radio. That was pretty much it. Late nights and lots of travels.
Right.
And then I had my two kids, you know.
That'll put a break on the travels and the parties and the...
Definitely. Yep. Well, you'd actually think that it would, but for me, it actually didn't, you know. But fast forward, you know, I think that everything just got a lot for me. And about maybe 4 or 5 months ago, I took a bit of a break. I went to do some soul searching. And I realized, gee, that I'm addicted to everything. Love, sex, drugs, alcohol, absolutely everything. That's the discovery I had made. And this is what it's led me to. So now I'm just on a completely different path. I'm trying to really get to know Sam, get to know what I'm good at, get to understand what it is that I want to do, what I want to do differently,
let me
and
ask
what I
you
want
this.
To do better.
All right, so if you're addicted, if you're addicted to everything, wouldn't that be good? Because that would mean you're addicted to life. And if you're addicted to life, then you should be full of bounce and full of joy, and everything you do should be exciting. And I don't see that as a problem. Plus, I see these people who claim that they're addictive personalities, and it's so funny. We've got this psychologist who joins us every Monday, called Dr. Hanan Bushkin, and he's terrific. And we're actually talking about this exact thing next week. I didn't know this when we started talking to you, but he's going to talk to us about addictive personalities and whether or not that's a thing, and whether it's an addictive personality or whether it's a person who just keeps making bad choices and then making excuses for themselves, because I don't know which one it is, right? I'm not a psychologist. But when you say you're addicted to everything, I mean, that sounds to me like someone who's just passionate about life.
Look, I mean, for me, it's never been anywhere in the middle. You know, it's either black or white, high highs, low lows. That's how it's always been for me. And I might have to actually agree with you. It's people who have really experienced almost everything that life has got to offer. But here I am realizing that for a very long time, my life became very unmanageable. I was all over the place. I didn't even know, as crazy as it sounds, I didn't even know how to engage with people. I didn't even want to deal with feelings. I mean, I lost my dad about a year ago, and here I am sitting, not even having known what the concept of mourning is. You know, so
did
yes,
you know, you,
I think.
How did you? How did you point. Feel? How did you feel on Father's Day? I mean, did it hit you then? Was it something that crossed your mind?
Look, gee, I'm still kind of avoiding that particular topic. I'd like to, you know, see myself as a mom and a dad for my youngest boy.
Sure.
So it was more about me, not so much my dad, because it is tough. You know, I'm still learning to deal with the very tough emotions. I'm still learning to deal with pain. I'm still learning to understand pain. So it was tough to an extent, but
when people go away to find themselves, or they do the soul searching stuff you were talking about just now, I get the distinct impression, I'm not saying this is the case for you, but I get the distinct impression with those people that they're totally self-indulgent, that like everything has to be about them, they're actually just creating a story within a story so that they'll feel important and that they can feel necessary and needed, and it's all so super self-indulgent. Do you not sometimes worry that that might be the path that you're going down when you do this stuff?
No, that was me, spot on. Self-obsessed, self-righteous, self-centered, everything self. That was me.
Yeah.
I've admitted to being somebody who...
And obviously you can't be like that when you're a mom, you know. It's impossible. Like you have to put your kids first, because, first of all, society's going to look at you funny if you don't. Second of all, that is your intention, unless you're an awful person. And third of all, it's very difficult to change the laws of nature around. I mean, there isn't a mom, unless she's a psychopath, in the world who'll put her kids after her. You know, kids go first. The kids get what they need first. And I suppose for many people who are not parents, that's a difficult thing to understand. But you know what I mean, right? When you're a mom, like, kids come first. Hmm?
I would also disagree with you, because for some people who need to take time off, it's not taking time off necessarily, but it's more like pressing pause on things.
Okay.
And so many people exist in so much dysfunction, it's almost a hamster wheel, and they just need to get off that and reset things there before they find a more healthier rhythm for them. So I don't think for some people it's just a narcissistic compound.
I mean, I don't, Sammy, I'm not questioning your motives. You know you better than I could ever know you, and I mean, even someone who does know you well doesn't know you as well as you know yourself, hopefully. Otherwise, what's the, you know, what have you been doing for these last whatever over many years? But where do you go? What do you actually do when you need to get away from it all and kind of soul search? And how can you do that? I mean, how is it possible? And where do you go? Like, first of all, where do you drop the kids? Second of all, no, but I mean, these are practical questions. There's probably a mom or a dad listening to this now going, fuck, I need that too. I need like some sort of break, as Sia's saying. A timeout.
Sure.
What do you do?
Well, to be honest, I mean, it's different for everybody. Some people, you know, go to India. Others maybe go to the mountain. Some go to rehab. And the reality is that you don't really know what is going to happen until you put yourself in that situation. And to be very honest, I was a selfish person for the longest time. I thought to myself, well, as long as my children have hot water, clothes on their back, electricity, a whole bunch of DVDs and a full pantry, that's me, I've done my job and I'm a good mom.
Right.
But that's absolutely not what it is at all. And you're right about being self-centered, self-obsessed, self-righteous, self-everything. And that's why I started off by saying, this is the discovery I made. This is the person that I've always been, this absolute addict who needed to go and study the brain. Why is my brain different to others? You know, why can't I just try something for 5 minutes and just leave it? You know, why do I have to go above and beyond?
I think we're a bit hard on ourselves. Like I was saying just now, I like people who have... In inverted commas, addictive personalities. I like people who are passionate about life. I like people who are excited about everything. Because to me, that makes you an exciting person to be around. And you have so much energy to give, you know? And you throw yourself into everything. And I know that's true for you. In the few times that we've had conversations or that I've been around you, I distinctly get the impression that you don't do half measures. And I don't want someone around who's got, you know, there's going to be some old lady one day who's sitting in a corner of a dark room. Everyone else is talking and no one's talking to her. And she's got a grumpy look in her face. And she's like, she's the woman who did 5 out of 50 instead of instead of 50 out of 50. And I'm like, I don't want to be talking to her as the old man who's doing like 5 out of 50 one day, because those people, they never have the kind of, you said highs and lows. I'd rather have some of those. I'd rather have some of those highs and lows, thank you very much, than be one of those ordinary people who just kind of does the bare minimum, and they're like an organism. You know, they stay alive, but they never really have that chocolate that they shouldn't, or they never go to that party that they shouldn't, and they never do the bungee jumping, or they never really push themselves because life's too scary. You see a lot of that with this pandemic, man. You know what I mean?
See, the downside to that is those type of people are the people who, when you have gone out for dinner, they go, let's just stop somewhere just for one drink.
Yeah.
Then we stop for one drink, which becomes 11 drinks. Then you think you're done for the night. And then as we're all going home, they go, actually, you know what? Cape Town is only one flight away. And then you go, oh, you know what? Fine. Next thing, you're dragging yourself back to work tomorrow morning during the walk of shame.
Aren't those the coolest people to hang around with? And I'm certainly not trying to get you going down a dark path again, Sammy.
I mean, you need a happy medium.
Yeah. I mean, what were you actually addicted? Like, did they diagnose you with any kind of addiction? And did you do any kind of rehab for something? Or was that just in your head?
No, gee, like, I mean, for the longest of times, I've had substance abuse problems.
Okay.
But had never really thought that, I mean, it was a problem. You know, here I am just going about my day, going about my life.
What were we doing? Were we doing alcohol, drugs, both?
Bit of both, here and there. Don't think I was much of a drinker, though.
Okay.
Are we talking
nose beers, or are we talking happy pills, or what are we?
That's a nice one.
Yeah, nose beers.
That's a nice one. Nose beers. Yeah, my nose is very busy for a long time.
Oh, right. Okay.
Never heard of that term before.
No, me neither.
Nose beers. Yeah.
But here's the thing. I woke up one morning and I thought enough is enough. You know, checked myself into a really really nice place, I must say. And that was what I did. Came across, you know, people just like me, you know, to be very honest. I thought I was just surrounded by a bunch of junkies, only to realize that, well, I'm in the right place, you know. I couldn't have asked for a better 4 months. I couldn't have made a better decision. And like I said, you know, it wasn't just for me to get away from my life, run away from my problems. I mean, that's what I've been doing my entire life, yeah? Just living a life of secrecy, being dishonest, not really being responsible, reliable, open, mindful, aware of people and that sort of thing. So it's not something that I knew I needed to do at the time. I just thought, you know, let's give this a try and see what it's
like. When you go to a place like that, do they take away your phone? Do they cut you off from the outside world? I mean, you do have real responsibilities in the outside world, so they couldn't exactly completely remove you from that.
They did. 30 days of no cell phone, Darren.
Really? And did that drive you? Yeah. Did that drive you crazy?
30 days of no cell phone, and you're there with about 30 other people. And there's a routine. I mean, you wake up, you got to make your bed, you got to clean the mirrors, it has to be spotless and that sort of thing.
Yes.
There's lectures, there's class, and you do this thing called the 12-step program. See, I don't know if you've heard of this 12-step program.
I have. This is the famous one that Alcoholics Anonymous developed, isn't it? And the people all over the world swear. I'm worried about that, though, because sometimes they just replace one addiction with another. Like they get you addicted to either some kind of psychotherapy or to religion or whatever the hell it is, and that just replaces your alcohol or drug or gambling or sex addiction.
So here's the thing. I mean, it's all a process, you know. You've got to kind of follow this program, right? See a psychiatrist, see a counselor, see all these people, and they talk to you about handing your thinking over. Because remember, you can't trust an addict at all.
Yeah.
You know, say, fuck you, we're going to make decisions for you.
Right.
And the thing is, I mean, I don't want to bash psychiatrists. I mean, everybody has a place, you know, and there was, I suppose, a need for that, you know. But sure. I did not respond well to the medication at all. Right? But this is part of the process. You're in there. You're in a safe environment, I suppose. Look, I didn't want to now become addicted to something else,
yeah.
You know. But you also got to trust the process. I think that the first thing that I had to do is say, I have a problem. I'm surrendering. I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol. I'm just going to hand it over. You guys take care of me, right? But I realized that I can't just hand it over. I have to want to be clean and sober.
When did you finish with all of this? Because, you know, if you've been out of there for like a few months now, it must feel pretty good that you can speak about it in the past tense. And I know that addicts always say, and they're always told in this 12-step program is, you know, I know because friends of mine have been through this. And then they say, no, but you never really stop being an addict. You just have to keep fighting that shit over and over again. But when did you finish? Or when did you leave?
So I went in at the end of November, and I was there for a month. I did primary for about a month, and then I did secondary for 3 months. It was never meant to be as long as it was.
Wow.
But I think I was also just used to this bubble. You know, when you're in this space, you realize that life is not like that. You know, you're in this bubble. It's safe. You've got, you know, addicts and alcoholics just like you, and you're fine. But I had to eventually leave this bubble, and
they,
I realized that.
Do they tell you?
No, it's a life change. I'm literally facing everything that I need to and being present, not just kind of going through the motions.
Do they tell you to stay for 4 months if you're really bad, or is that just a choice you make?
Oh.
I mean, are people listening to this now going, fuck it, I was only in there for a month. This Sammy's got serious problems. Huh?
Yeah, fucked up. No. I mean, look, the plan, like I said, was never to leave after 4 months. But every time I got to the final stretch, I thought, fuck, I really don't want to go. Shit, I can't do this.
So did you almost have a bit of Stockholm syndrome, you know, like where people get abducted and then they fall in love with their abductor. And I mean, that's not at all a good analogy for what you must have been feeling. But it has happened.
But it was a safety net. It was a comfort. You now had handed yourself over and you were used to that.
It's like a lot of people, a lot of people in lockdown have still not left their houses because they feel like cocooned and safe, and like they've got their little Nunu blanket around them, and the real world is much too scary for them in some ways.
Yeah.
Is there something like that that's going on in your head when you get to like month 3 and you don't want to leave?
Look, the best thing that I could have done for myself in my final month was to do what they call a phase 4, where you kind of do half of the day in treatment and you leave lunchtime and kind of reintegrate back into society. It sounds bizarre. You know, I really wasn't like, you know, in a cave or anything. I was literally, you know, up the road.
Yeah.
But you don't actually realize how for 3 months you've just been, like I said, in this bubble. So I got an opportunity to every day leave and spend time with my son, to, you know, go to the shops, to be very honest, life goes on.
Yeah, of course.
You're in treatment and the world doesn't stop.
And
you know,
tell me,
everything just
like people on the outside, you know, like your friends who are you initially embarrassed to answer questions? Because I love the way you're talking about this so frankly, because really, this is what people need to hear. I mean, there's so many of us going through all kinds of things, right? And this shouldn't be embarrassing. Seeking this kind of treatment is for me quite heroic. You're actually doing yourself and the people you love a huge favor by doing this stuff. It should be celebrated. And I think a lot of people are still kind of embarrassed when they talk about stuff like this. I mean, when people asked you, where have you been, Sammy? I haven't seen you in a while. What's been going down? Did you struggle to tell them the truth in the beginning?
You know, I was telling Sia not so long ago that the answer that I always give is, oh, I just went on a bit of a hiatus and did a bit of soul searching. I can never say that I went to a treatment center. To be very honest, I didn't even think I was going to do it today.
Huh.
But, you know, I've had to wake up every morning and say, hi, I'm Sam and I'm an addict. This is my life. I've had to accept it for what it is. I think that, like I said, it is important to have these types of conversation. It is important to look at the journey and say, I wasn't a good role model. I wasn't a good mum. I wasn't a good sister. I wasn't a good daughter. I mean, my father passed away and he wasn't able to even see me.
Horrible.
You know, go into treatment and just fucking get my shit together, you know. And I'd like to think that addicts are probably one of the most incredible, they're master manipulators, good at keeping secrets, fucking, you know, good at lying.
Yeah.
And that's what things were, you know. My life was a fucking disaster and a fucking secret. And nobody could ever tell what was fact versus fiction, you know. It's the reality. So here I am during this 12-step program, you know, admitting that I'm powerless, going through the motions, and looking at things like my resentments. You know, it's easy for me to say, fuck, I hate everybody. You know, I hate you did me wrong, you were never there for me, you abandoned me, you fucked me over. Mm-hmm. It's easy to say that. But then you've got to look at what is the role that you played in these resentments. And then you think, fuck, I was unkind, I didn't show compassion, I was dishonest, I could have been better, I didn't show empathy. And you realize how you've hurt the people who have really, really been in your corner. I mean, my mom, when I was in treatment, my mom wrote me a letter. And she said, you know, your life is a secret. My brother wrote me a letter and said, I've traumatized him with my aggression. And here I'm thinking, I've got this wonderful relationship with my brother. I'm the older sister.
Meanwhile,
but he's telling me in paragraph after paragraph, you've traumatized me. Your friends are never consistent. You're not a good mom.
Sure.
I mean, it's bizarre.
Must have been hard.
But for 23 years. Hard to hear that. Your brother's been sitting with this, you know. So it's and it's spot on. It is just self. When are you going to just get out of your head and not make it about you?
You know, to do exactly that, Dog Ozo says here, I had a great time soul searching in Cape Town for 2 years after being dumped by my ex-fiance. Sometimes you just need to press the reset button. And it wasn't like Dog Ozo was checking into rehab, but I'm interested in this part of what you're telling us, and you know, we've got to get to headlines in a second, but I'm curious to know this thing about being dishonest, because so many of us go through life, we tell ourselves a story, right, and we think, well, this is my narrative, this is my story, and we live by that, even though we know we're just talking shit to ourselves. We're just that's not the truth. Actually, we are either a lot better or a lot worse than we give ourselves credit for. And we must come to terms with that at some point. At some point, you have to reckon with the reality of your life, to face those demons. And for many people, it is just an impossible thing. They'd rather just keep lying until they're dead.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the just for today, yesterday was actually about being honest.
Yeah.
I mean, just don't lie, you know, don't lie. But I think that when you're so caught up and you're so consumed, you actually don't think about the consequences. I mean, one of the things that I'm currently doing, and, you know, I guess I can talk about it a little bit later, is I'm working with 28 matriculants in Cosmos City. And none of them give a fuck about consequences. They never play the movie out. And that's what I've learned to do, is to play the movie out until the end. You know, what is going to happen if I do this? And that's what I love about having to have worked on my anger, is to learn the concept of equanimity, you know, is to really, no matter what happens, the feedback that you get, the shit that you face, good or bad, you take a step back and you just really think about it, you know. And that's what I wasn't doing for the longest of time. So, I mean, not only am I studying the brain, learning about the dopamine and the serotonin and whatever.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm learning about other people. I'm really learning about just how to engage with others.
Tracy says, your honesty is so refreshing. And then she adds this, which I think is true for a lot of people. Self-indulgence always leads to self-destruction. That's so true. And then Keenan has got no sympathy for you. Keenan says, same old shit, druggy story, me, where? So not everybody's sympathetic.
That's what it used to be. That's what it used to be. At least now I'm not fucking putting myself first all the time. Thanks, Keenan.
Yeah. Well done. All right, well, listen, that's a hell of a roller coaster to start the morning with, sure.
Yeah.
That's one way to start the morning.
We brought you on here.
I should have started by saying, hi, I'm Sam, and I'm an addict.
Yeah.
You see it? Who are you?
Girl, that's so funny. Living this thing called life.
Wow. Well, first of all, I mean, you look terrific. So I don't know whether that's helped you to kind of get back into a routine or anything. Not that you ever looked shitty, but you look great. And it sounds to me like you've got some balance going on there, which is awesome. I mean, most of us don't. Let's face it. A lot of us think we do, and we don't. Got to get to some headlines for this morning. Let's see what's happening in the world. Pay attention to some of this stuff. You know, they found these 21 miners who were killed in a mine shaft in Orkney in the northwest. And this happens every now and then, and people are like, well, 21 people. You know, if 21 people were found in a house, it would be headline news for 6 weeks, and we'd want to know who owned the house, we'd want to know who lived there, we want to know what happened. But illegal miners, these Zama-Zamas, are found 21 of them dead in a mine shaft, and we're like, ah, yeah, it happens. It's just unbelievable how there's this huge contrast between the way that we treat people who are dirt poor and who are trying to scrape together a living in an abandoned or illegal mine, and how we treat everyone else in society. They turn out to be Lesotho nationals, and families have identified the remains of their loved ones at a government mortuary in Klerksdorp. The body count is at 21, as I said. The burnt and decomposing bodies of the illegal miners were found outside a disused mine shaft last week. They had been killed by a gas explosion at an abandoned shaft. They also informed the Lesotho government. The number has increased now because a lot of people have arrived, said the Lesotho Consul General. Horrible story. This stuff happens more than we would like to know. And it's just frightening to think about that. It really is. The UDM is going to take SAA to court, or rather Pravin Gordhan to court, for selling 51% of SAA to a consortium which is held by ANC cadres. Bantu Holomisa is having none of it. He said Takaso Consortium, that was announced as a strategic equity partner for SAA just the other day, he says that's absolutely unbelievable, and it's not possible that these guys could have taken this over legitimately. So Bantu has pointed out the deal sounds amazing for SAA, but there's been no clarity on it, and he wants to know what's going on. They say they're putting in 3 billion rand, which is in an airline is nothing. It's not nearly enough to keep it going for long enough. And he wants some clarity. So let's see.
But also this 51% is this gift that keeps on giving and not in a good way. Because then you end up finding out, oh, well, this stake is owned by this person who's related to this one. And then also was in the ANC way back when. And now they've all banded together and then is linked to the president. And then you go, okay.
Well, it's dodgy, right? That sounds about as ethical and decent as the kind of person who's lying to themselves the whole time. The ANC's lying to itself. I see this second headline for this morning. Paul Mashatile has put out a statement saying, "We will build an ethical ANC that acts against corruption without fear or favor."
Okay.
Have we heard that before?
Okay, sir.
Listen to this. He actually said this. This is the line. "The ANC will follow in the steps of the Chinese Communist Party in building an ethical organization that deals with corruption without fear or favor." You mean the Chinese Communist Party, the ones who spread coronavirus all around the world because they lied to us in the beginning and said, no, this is not human-to-human transferable. The CPC, the Chinese Communist Party, who also got the WHO in their thrall and said to them, if you don't say nice things about us, then we'll kick you out and we'll stop funding you. The Chinese Communist Party, who allowed people to travel outside of China with the coronavirus and spread it all over the world, killing some 3 or 4 million people, as the count is at the moment, but welded people into their apartments in Wuhan in order to stop it from spreading there. That's the ethical organization that you want to use as a template, Paul Mashatile? Are you insane? Have you lost your mind that this is the comparison you want to... You actually want us to compare you to the Chinese Communist Party? I mean, birds of a feather, right? So he says, he's the guy, of course, behind the party's finances. And he says the ANC is seeking to root out corruption and regain the trust of its members. Not the South African public at large, just its members. I think your members have your trust because they're all part of the network of patronage. That's something you don't need to really worry about, Paul. Anyway, he says, we share deep bones of friendship and solidarity with the people of China. He's now gilding the lily. Listen to this.
Aww.
Although our countries are continents apart, although we have very different histories, there is much that we have in common, and there is much we can learn from each other. Yeah, how to lie to the world, how to protect your party before everything else. Keep doing that. That sounds like a great idea, Paul Mashatile. Moron. Really, what a moron. Should be embarrassed to say something like that. Son of a bitch.
I wonder how many people this statement went through before they decided it was fit for the public. Because no one thought, should we really go out and say this? And at this point, I mean, well, for the ANC, it's time to just prove with their actions, not through words in a statement.
Yeah, it is. It is time. And we'll see if they can live up to that. I don't see any indication that that's going to happen. And then this is just, again, making me think, who can you trust? If Paul Mashatile says, no, we want to be more like the Chinese Communist Party, then you can trust us. It would seem not. But here, a federal judge in the U.S. on Monday dismissed most of the claims filed in a case suing former President Donald Trump after security officers forcefully cleared peaceful demonstrators outside the White House last summer. Turns out they didn't forcefully clear a whole bunch of protesters outside the White House last summer. You remember when Trump was accused of creating a photo opportunity when he went to that church? Remember that? And there was this huge outcry, and they're like, how can Donald Trump move peaceful protesters with force and violence just so he can do a photo op? Well, turns out none of that was true. Turns out the whole thing was nonsense. As Donald would say, fake news. Who do we believe? Now, what we've been told for the last year, Donald Trump is a liar and he's the guy who you shouldn't believe. Well, it seems everybody who was saying that to us turns out that they're the liars, and maybe he wasn't as dishonest as they said he was. Anyway, the district judge of Washington dismissed the majority of claims filed against Trump, explaining in a 51-page opinion that the accusations that the ex-president and several of his top officials had conspired to clear a path were too speculative. These allegations, taken as true, do not show sufficient events, conversations, or documents indicating an agreement or meeting of the minds among the defendants to violate the plaintiff's rights based on their membership in a protected class, she wrote. So Donald Trump gets off on those charges because it turns out it wasn't what they said it was. Nice to know. Nice to know. The damage is done, but there we go. And while we're in North America, the Mexican president said this week, he is Andrés Manuel López Obrador. He said on Monday that he was going to condemn a shooting, a spree that had killed 14 innocent victims over the weekend in a crime-plagued border state. Everything indicates it wasn't a confrontation between rival gangs. But what else could it be, Mr. President of Mexico? I mean, when that many people, 14 innocent victims, get killed, isn't that gang violence where people get caught in the crossfire? You would think, right? He says it was it was a cowardly attack. That phone your abuela, Sia, and ask her if she's okay.
You know, my abuela was so confused when she was just making some tacos. Heard these bang, bang, bang.
This is such racial profiling going on here. Anyway.
And then she said, oh, I must put down my machacas.
Oh, my God. Okay, yeah, this is going to – well, Mexicans are going to be upset with you for this, but let's carry on.
I'm quiet now.
Apparently, he said – this is the president of Mexico – it was a cowardly attack that took the lives of innocent people. He had instructed the Attorney General's office to lead the investigation into the murders, and he said they are going to look at the details of this. The individual who is captured with a long weapon of exclusive use in the army will appear before a judge. So clearly people with military and paramilitary weapons. Very, very ugly story. That's in Mexico, where it's still dangerous. Who knew? All right. Very, very good.
Well, I mean, not all of Mexico is dangerous.
No, but
if just 14 people just died, you know, we have 21 people who died in a mine.
That's true. That's true. And people,
not the whole of South Africa
but people,
is dangerous.
People do call us dangerous here, you know, and we are dangerous.
Well,
we're dangerous people. All right. Sure we are. We're going to turn our attention to Jean-Jacques Cornish now and get an update on what's going on the continent of Africa. So we're going to catch up with JJ in Africanalysis, which is our bi-monthly feature, which is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. It looks at the happenings on the African continent. And let's go to JJ Cornish now. Good morning, JJ. How are you?
JJ is on mute.
Ah, you just got to unmute yourself there, and then we can hear you.
I am exceedingly well, thanks, Gareth, and good bonjour to you.
Very good.
I just have to send away, I've got a guy in a sombrero in a stretch limo playing La Cucaracha outside my house.
Yeah, that's not racist at all after what Sia said about his abuela.
My abuela's favorite song.
Yeah, this is great.
He's holding an AK-47. I hope, I don't imagine he's going to bother you.
Thank you, JJ, for making sure that Sia isn't the only one on the show who's doing racial stereotyping. Thank you for that. That's very important. And just to make it even more fair and free this morning, we're going to maybe play La Cucaracha later on when you say goodbye. So, JJ, what's been happening? Africa is never a boring place, and this week, like any other given week, full of interesting news. Where do you want to start?
Well, you know, so interesting. I was looking last night, and suddenly this story comes up with Africa and South Africa is going to be the hub for this, to start making COVID-19 vaccines. Fantastic news. We have Emmanuel Macron saying he's delighted. Well, of course, he went to the launch of a facility when he visited here 2 weeks ago. The WTO head Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala is saying that, yes, this will be South Africa. It's a joint venture with the World Health Organization and the African Union. And Nkosi Okonjo-Iweala is saying that we could have hubs in Senegal and Rwanda. But the question you always have to ask when you deal with an African, particularly an African big idea, is when, how long, when are we going to get these vaccines?
Right.
And, you know, we have 40 million vaccines in Africa have been dispensed, but that's about 2%. The poorer countries are just not getting enough. Again, the World Health Organization saying this. How long? The answer to that question depends on the drug companies, doesn't it? When are they going to transfer the technology and the know-how? When are they going to waive the intellectual property rights? All of them are saying, yeah, well, okay, we're going to do it. The fact is, nobody has come up with that yet. Now, are we going to have Joe Biden saying, forcing companies like, he can do it, Moderna, force them to do it. Mm. Will he do that? These are the questions. So we have great hopes now that the vaccine, which is not getting to Africa, the COVAX thing is just not working. You know, they said they would do 2 billion doses by the end of 21. To the 80 countries, poorer countries that's supposed to get them. Well, right. That's not happening. So we have to make it ourselves. Cyril Ramaphosa, our president, is right in that regard. But we just have to see when it's going to happen. And we're waiting. The COVAX thing, at least several African countries, I can think of Uganda and Zimbabwe, saying they're running out of the vaccines in COVAX. Mm. Here in South Africa, well, we seem to be going along and vaccinating, but, you know, still the wrinklies of getting vaccinated. And it's, in fact, you know, whereas in other countries, Germany, Britain, 12-year-olds are now getting the jab. So, you know, it's there is no equity. When they talk about vaccine apartheid, it's a very well-chosen phrase. But good news, I would have to say, for South Africa. And maybe it'll mean that we can become a hub for other vaccines as they get developed. Good news for us.
Of course, this is good news, but we've got to remember that it is due entirely to the hard work of these pharmaceutical companies that we even have these vaccines at the moment. And you don't just take someone's intellectual property away just because there's a need in the world. Otherwise, they're going to stop doing research and development, and we may not have vaccines in the future because we then we chop these companies off at the knee before they can actually spend the money that it takes to do the miraculous job that they've done. And no one deserves more credit than the pharmaceutical companies, because it's thanks to them, not thanks to governments, that we have the incredible rollout of vaccines and the incredibly fast turnaround of vaccines that has happened in the last 12 months. And you know, it's all good and well for governments to say, well, we're just going to generically develop your vaccine in our own territories, and we're not going to pay any attention to your patents and your intellectual property. But that seems to me to cut off your nose to spite your face, because the next time we need them, they might be more reluctant or take a longer time to do things because we don't give them the money that they need to do it.
I don't have swing a bat for Big Pharma at all. I believe that when they develop it, they are looking after themselves. I don't think that we are taking from them anything that they're not going to make billions from anyway. So, yes, indeed, this, and I do think that governments got behind Big Pharma in this regard to get the vaccine made so quickly. I do believe that at a time of pandemic, it's not the time to think of profit. I think you have to do the job that you designed to do. And in the longer term, the pharmaceutical companies aren't going to come up short. You know, it's like, I suppose, like the Arab carpet salesman, for another racial stereotype. Yeah. You know, when they sell you that carpet at half the price they told you initially, they're still going to make a profit. So, you know, even though they weep and say that, you know, you're robbing me, I don't believe that to be the case, and certainly don't believe that a Big Pharma are going to cut themselves short or do themselves down.
Well, then if I read you correctly, then all credit due to Donald Trump for Operation Warp Speed, because then that is what deserves the credit. No?
Well, he and others, for that, in that regard, Donald Trump deserve regard for Operation Warp Speed. I have no doubt about that. The fact is, though, that he screwed up the dealing with the pandemic and cost hundreds of millions of lives is also to his eternal discredit.
Well, I wouldn't say hundreds of millions of lives. We've only had about 3 million deaths in the world. But, yeah, okay. I mean, you know, by hyperbole, I hear you. So let's talk a little bit about the other stuff going on. Are we still worried about this this dam and on the Nile? Is there any development there? Because I remember just 2 months ago, that was the big story. And Egypt and Ethiopia and the United States and the African Union were all involved in that. We spent a bit of time in the last few weeks talking about some of the other countries in the Horn of Africa, and you've enlightened us beautifully as to what those countries' roles are in that region and who their friends and who their enemies are. Is that still the focus of all the major African internal politics at the moment, or is it shifting?
It certainly is a significant focus, and we have Somalia, Ethiopia, vaguely different situations. Egypt believes that its very lifeblood is being withheld or can be withheld if the dam fills and Ethiopia contains it. Mm-hmm. Sudan knows that it must play along to some extent because the dam will safeguard it from the floods, which are more damaging for Sudan than they are for Egypt, where they flood plains and leave alluvial deposits that become growth fields. Hmm. But the thing in Ethiopia right now is, of course, the election. They voted on Sunday, and it went peacefully. But it's Abiy Ahmed's, the Prime Minister's, greatest test since becoming Prime Minister 2018, winning the Nobel Peace Prize, and not since then behaving like a Nobel Peace Prize winner for his very, very tough crackdown on opposition in Tigray. It was armed opposition, so you can understand a certain toughness, but he now is denying that there's hunger, some are saying famine, in Tigray. Hmm. And the electoral board, which is the electoral commission in Ethiopia, actually warns his prosperity party against undue and unnecessary involvement in the elections. The UNHCR chief, High Commission for Human Rights chief, Michel Bachelet, when that session opened in Geneva, spoke about the ethnic tensions in Ethiopia, and they were considerable. And there's deadly violence, she was saying. You know, of the 547 constituencies in Ethiopia, more than 100 of them did not vote 2 days ago because of the security situation, Tigray being one of those. Oromia, the most populous of them, they called for a boycott. And many of the opposition groups are maintaining that they were prevented from campaigning. But the election did pass clearly, and we have an African Union observer team headed by Olusegun Obasanjo, the former Nigerian president. So, you know, we wait to see. It'll be a couple of weeks, I think, before we get a final result there. But it is the absolute or the final, the most important test of Abiy Ahmed's leadership.
Now, one of the things that we love about having you on, JJ, is that people get to hear about all these far-flung countries and places like Djibouti and Eritrea. But I wonder if it wouldn't be worth looking at some of our more proximal neighbors, perhaps, you know, places like Botswana, which I think is a fascinating country to look at. They've got a small population. They seem to have dealt with coronavirus quite well by comparison with other countries. They've got a currency which outperforms ours. They've got enormous alluvial diamond deposits, and they've got great mining operations in Botswana. It's also a largely unspoilt natural wilderness, and their government is quite interesting too. Do you think that Botswana is interesting, or is it just me? Because perhaps we should cover that.
Usually so. Next week I will do Botswana for you.
Mm.
I know Botswana well because I did some business there. In fact, when I left newspapers, I thought I might become a newspaper magnate, and I brokered the sale of a newspaper in Botswana. So I made a bit of tom that way. But I did learn that for all the democracy, et cetera, the Botswana government is quite a spiteful bunch.
Oh.
I don't actually know many governments that are not spiteful. But I'll be very happy to talk at some length about Botswana tomorrow. You know, Botswana, of course, very bravely took in a lot of South African refugees during the apartheid era,
yes,
and paid the price for that. You know, they were attacked physically, literally bombed from the air by the apartheid forces. And of course, that Sunday being World Refugee Day, we have disturbing news that there are record levels of displacement of Africans. 32 million Africans are displaced, either as refugees or living as internally displaced people. That number is up from 29 million 2 years ago. But it's very big. 10 countries have 88% of these refugees, and all of them come from conflict areas. We think of Nigeria, we think of Central African Republic, we think of South Sudan. And many, seven of them have sort of countries that lean towards autocracy.
Right.
Sub-Saharan Africa has 26% of the refugees. The High Commissioner for Refugees is saying 18 million people in this area are quotes of concern. So it's disturbing news in that regard. And I wish that we in South Africa we're just a little bit kinder to refugees. We less than glorious record of treating refugees in our country.
Absolutely. And we know about the xenophobic violence that happens in certain parts of this country, which is a deep embarrassment to us. JJ, it's always good to see you and, well, to hear you this morning and to get an update from you on what's going on in Africa. We will no doubt check in with you very shortly, and we'll cover, among other things, Botswana, which I think will interest many people. But thanks again for your time and for your insights.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much. JJ Cornish in our African Update, African Analysis today. And JJ is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. Every single week we get to focus on, or every second week we get to focus on Africa and on stories that are going on this continent, the things that affect Africans most. So there's some interesting stuff for you to ponder this morning. We also are joined this morning by Sia Sangweni and by Sammy Lehoko. It's always good to see Sammy. We haven't spoken to her since, the days of Touch Central. That was what, like 4 years ago or something? Huh?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. I'm getting old. I just realized I'm getting very old.
Well, you look fine. Don't you worry.
All
of us are getting old. Sia, have you decided on the Botox yet? This is very important.
Botox, a puff, a slip, a pull, a tug, all of it.
Oh, Sia.
Maybe I should do that soon.
Yeah. It's not.
Treat myself to an early Christmas present.
Why not, Sia? That sounds like a good thing to do. All right, a lot of
Look, I'm still going to be at the office for the rest of the week doing the show from here, and I've actually decided the one key thing that I miss the most about being at home is my ring light.
Oh, is that what you need? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, I'm trying out this new camera this morning, but I don't know if it works or not. I feel like I'm.
No, you're looking lovely.
I feel
you're
like
I'm looking really.
Yeah, yeah, but I feel like I look all pink and like a pig. I wonder if it's this light. Let me adjust the lighting quickly. Let's see if this is any better. Wait, hang on. Oh no, that's even worse. Right, that's worse.
That's like a cool blue.
That's also not great. That's about the best. Or I could switch it off and then you. What do you think?
No, I prefer number two actually.
Okay, let's try again. Number one. You like number two? That one. Mm-hmm. You think that's better?
That one's good.
Okay, we'll do that. That one's really good. See, I need to figure this shit out. Otherwise, I'm going to look horrible, and God alone knows it's bad.
Number one is that lighting at home affairs, or when you go to get your visa done.
Yeah.
Just, it's a no.
When they usually take your passport photo, they use that number one, right? It's just it floods your whole face with light. Horrible. Okay, well, we'd like to hear from you this morning. You can get hold of us on the YouTube comments, which we get live to the show. Remember to like and subscribe. Will you, Sammy, take care of the usual YouTube like and subscribe message, please? You know how it goes. Remind people to like and subscribe. You know how to do this. I know you're.
Do I?
I know you're an expert at this. You've watched enough YouTube videos to know, and you've made enough.
What do all of the YouTube?
I really have not watched enough. I'm always the one skipping the ads and fast forwarding and all that
all right.
kind of bullshit.
Well, let's Sia show you how it's done. Here we go. Sia, you're on.
Oh wait. Can I give you one better actually?
Yes.
One of our listeners sent us a video.
Okay.
Grant Gardner sent us a video to tell us
Let me play his. That's a good idea. Here it is. Here's Grant. All right.
Oh, wow.
If you like my channel, don't forget to like and subscribe. Hit the bell, yo.
There we go. See, that's a good one. I like that very much.
Oh, my God.
That's awesome. Very nice. All right, so remember to like and subscribe. Otherwise, you know what happens. I get shat on, and I'm not in the mood for that this morning.
I appreciate Grant had, like, music for us. Then he faded out. Then he gave us the message.
And Grant awesome looks stuff. Like he flies planes for a living. He had epaulets on there and some wings.
Ooh.
Yeah. He looks like he's a pilot. So that's pretty cool.
Grant. Oh, thank you for your service.
You looking for a man there, Sammy? Are we back on the market?
I mean, I don't know if this is the right platform, but anything goes.
Hey, these days, everywhere is a platform.
Anything?
People are so desperate to find attention, love, a partner, someone to share their life with, someone to share coronavirus with, lockdown with. I don't think there's anything that's out of bounds at the moment. You go wherever you can. You get whatever you can get.
Look, I'm all about this whole thing of like, so one thing I discovered when I was in treatment is that I'm absolutely obsessed with connection. I'm absolutely obsessed with love. I have to always constantly be in a fucking relationship, which, you know, kind of makes sense, you know. But I was told that I have to be complete myself before I can be with someone.
That's correct.
I have to find another complete human being.
You sound
because
like
this whole thing of like one half and one half bullshit doesn't work.
That sounds very therapy.
Yeah, she doesn't sound like she totally believes that. I was told that I meant to.
I think it's actually bizarre.
No, it's mostly true. You need to be happy with yourself, or you will never be happy with anyone else. So if you still sounds like you need another month.
Garrett send me back. Yeah. Okay, fine.
It just also doesn't sound nice in romantic movies. You know, it was, who was it? Tom Cruise says, "You complete me."
Yeah, that was.
Now it won't be that. It's like, well, are you whole? Because I am whole too. And two wholes. Well, no, that doesn't sound romantic.
That sounds beautiful. That actually sounds very good. We constantly want to fill this void. Oh, we together complete each other. You make one half and I make the other half. No.
I mean, try to put that in a song like John Legend. It just won't work.
There's a deeper meaning behind this whole thing, you know. I'm just talking.
No. What is the deeper meaning? Go on, and you've got to finish that thought because now people are going to be wondering.
Wait. Look, one of the things, especially when it comes to relationships, is I realize that I have so many high expectations of people, unrealistic expectations, which is something that I've had to work on for the longest of times, you know. And having these high expectations of people, I'm always going to end up being disappointed, you know. So I've realized to completely remove expectations out of my life.
No, there's a healthy amount of expectation. Like, you can't have none. If you have none, you're going to end up with some loser who does nothing for you.
Underneath a bridge.
Under a bridge with a half jack of, like...
Bridges are interesting.
Who can't pay for your highlights?
You want to live under a bridge. That's your business. But, no, you have to have a... There's a healthy amount of expectation. But here's the thing. Expectation has to meet reality at some point. So if your expectations are ridiculous, then no one's going to be good enough, which is what you were saying before. But if you have no expectations, then everyone's good enough. And somewhere in the middle, you get what you deserve. And maybe it's better than...
Gareth, you are preaching!
And maybe it's better than you think it is, and maybe it's worse than you think it is. But this is important stuff. Like, if you want to be happy, then those are the conditions. And some people, like you said just now, need someone else to complete them, in that cheesy quote from the Tom Cruise movie. But other people are already operating at a very high level of happiness, and maybe they need less. So maybe they don't want a relationship. They just want someone to sleep with, or they maybe just want someone to talk to, or they want someone to, you know, go on holiday with, or they don't mind living with someone, but they're not in a relationship with someone. Everything is very much malleable in the 21st century. You just got to decide how much of it you want.
No, absolutely. Look, I think another thing is also, you know, some of us are not setting boundaries, you know, and that's why perhaps I also landed up where I did, you know, not setting healthy boundaries, constantly crossing the boundaries of others, you know, absolutely fuck all respect. I mean, it's just bizarre. And I think that's why, you know, I had to have the uncomfortable, tough conversations, you know, saying this is what you did and it was not on. You crossed the boundary. You didn't respect my space. You didn't respect my time. Yeah. You didn't respect my principles and values, you know. And I think that's also a very, very important thing is the topic of principles and values. Yes, the fact that I was unkind and dishonest and all those kind of things. The fact that I can identify the opposite means that I've always been those things. I just haven't been practicing it.
What was that Tom Cruise movie with You Complete Me and You Had Me at Hello?
Jerry Maguire.
That was it. I struck a complete blank. All right, listen,
Show me the money.
Show me the money.
Yeah.
That's right. We have an incredible hour coming up with Sammy, with Sia, with me, with you, and Blind History also in the next hour of the show. Stick around, cliffcentral.com, on a Tuesday morning. It's the day after the winter solstice, so the sun only came up at like 7:05. So that is how deep in the winter we are right now. Stick around. There's a whole lot more to come. Cliffcentral.com.